The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Hello and welcome to The Price of Football, the show that looks at the money behind the beautiful game with me, Kevin Day, and him, Liverpool University's Kieran Maguire. Think of us as GB's oldest Olympic gymnasts. Kieran's very good on the high horse, and I can buy drinks from both parallel bars at the same time. Now, I thought that was quite funny, Kieran, the high horse. That's because you are good on the high horse, aren't you? I'm going to miss the Olympics, you know, Kieran. It's given me really easy intros to do while the Olympics have been going on. Remember, Kieran, a few weeks ago we interviewed Rob Angus, vice chair of Swindon Town Supporters Trust, and today we interviewed Rob Angus, chief executive of Swindon Town Football Club. I say interview, Kieran. It's more of a lap of honour, really, at the end of a remarkable story, or maybe who knows, the beginning of another remarkable story. So that interview's coming up, and it's well worth the wait. But first, a few news stories in a quietish week, Kieran. I think it's safe to say, and We start with more Robins, as it happens. The little bugger you could hear all the way through the last pod seems to have disappeared, presumably to bully another household somewhere else. Seriously, he started having a go at me yesterday for sitting in my own garden. The cat's been under the bed since Sunday. That Robin was a proper wrong, and I couldn't get close enough to check, but I'm fairly certain he had a tattoo. Although somebody did tweet us to say that robins are so territorial they will attack their own reflections, which made me laugh because I did that myself once. I came home very drunk and thought there was an intruder in the bedroom. I won't be doing that again, as Ali told me at the time. But Kieran, we do have some news stories, as I say, and very, very hot off the press. The government has approved a rollover of the Premier League TV deal.
Yes, and this is another story broke by our very good chum Matt Slater at The Athletic. We knew that the Premier League was keen to roll over the existing deal that they have with their senior partners, which is Sky, BT, Amazon and the BBC. However, it has to have government approval because in theory, if there is no proper tender taking place, it could be deemed to be anti-competitive. There are new people coming into the broadcast market all the time, especially with streaming services. We've seen the likes of Netflix and so on really expand in recent years. But from looking at things, either from the perspective of expediency, i.e. the government wants to be seen to be encouraging the Premier League to give more money to grassroots football, and this deal apparently commits £100 million to grassroots over the 3 years. Or it could have been that there wasn't any objections from the streaming companies, that it's going to just bounce along again. So we've got a degree of certainty. I think Sky and BT will be happy because they're not having to pay extra money. And I think the Premier League will be absolutely delighted because the last deal that they did sign, which was, 2017, 2018, that involved them taking a broadcast revenue cut of around about 10% for the domestic market. We've seen the German deal be slightly reduced, the Italian deal be slightly, you know, there's been sort of, you know, minor haircuts there. And as far as the French deal is concerned, I think our friends at Manscaped have been let loose, because that one's gone down by about 80%. The Premier League to maintain the level of domestic rights has got to be seen as a big victory.
I really hope that somewhere in Germany there's a children's barbershop called Minor Haircuts. So this is clearly it's good news. I'm guessing, Kieran, I know that notwithstanding an yet unidentified variant that causes another lockdown, there will be far fewer games on TV, certainly Premier League games in the coming season, won't there?
That's right. Under the deal, there are 380 Premier League TV games in total, and 200 of them are subject to broadcast by the senior partners. So we will be seeing the return of 3 p.m. Saturday kickoffs. Mm. Not many of them, because we've got the interference of TV dictating kickoff times, and then of course we have both the Europa League and the Europa Conference League taking place. So that will impact upon kickoffs as well. So, you know, for the likes of Spurs and those other clubs that have qualified for those competitions, they won't be having too many Saturday 3 o'clocks either.
Yeah, I noticed, I think Brighton-Watford's on very early in the season. That's Sky getting one of the games out of the way quite quickly, isn't it?
Yes. Well, I mean, what Sky are clever at doing is that every team is effectively guaranteed 10 appearances from the major broadcasters. So if you get, and let's be honest, Brighton versus Watford is not something that people are going to, it's not a page turner. I'll be the first to admit that. By getting a match of that magnitude out early, it allows the broadcasters to A, fill a gap in their schedule, and B, hold things back for the clubs that generate the big ratings.
Yeah, it's going to be good news for home base as well. That'll be packed with Brighton Watford on. In other news, other bird-related news, in fact, and this time it's the cockerels. Not brilliant for Tottenham when 100 million quid's worth of talent decides not to turn up for training. Are Manchester City the only English club who can afford Harry Kane? Although there are rumours, though, that they're still 40 million short of Tottenham's asking price.
Well, no, they are not. Chelsea could equally afford Harry Kane. Chelsea have been selling. We've spoken about Chelsea's sort of conveyor belt of young talent that they sell for fees which go underneath the radar. And they sold. Yeah. They've sold one of their youth players to you recently. Mm-hmm. They just sold another one to Southampton. Mm-hmm. So Chelsea are in fact the biggest generators of transfer income in the UK, and they've done that over the past five seasons. So they're very clever there. So it's not a problem. I think the issue is between the player and the club. You and I, Kevin, we've both played Sunday League football where people haven't turned up. Mm. And that's normally because of a hangover or they've pulled or both the previous evening. I can't see why Spurs can't do the same. You know, if he turns up sort of half an hour after the match kicks off and says, "Sorry, lads, I'm okay for the second half," then as far as I'm concerned, yeah, he should be allowed to put on the shirt and come on as a sub.
Yeah, every team's got at least one player. Whether you don't mind whether they train or not, you just go, "That's fine. It's Harry. As long as he turns up and plays, that's all right." It's interesting what you say about Chelsea there. Funny, I was watching Sky Sports News last night, and they have the little sidebar of Premier League clubs, players out, players in, and Chelsea's went. I stopped counting at about 22. Most of whom were loans or transfers, or young players, and it's astonishing the way Chelsea continue to do business that way, just no matter who's managing. But this is a story about Tottenham and possibly Man City or Chelsea, and it looks like Harry's going somewhere. But these are clubs that have got a different wage structure to Spurs, because you've indicated in the past that Tottenham's wage structure is run on an odd basis, basically. The basic wages aren't that high, are they, at Tottenham?
It is a very heavily incentivized wage structure. And Spurs only pay £45 in wages for each £100 that comes through the door, which from a spreadsheet point of view, from a business point of view, is sensational. And they've managed to have the trophy in terms of best wage control in the Premier League, I think, for the last three seasons. But that does mean that there is potentially more money on offer elsewhere. Whether that's the driving force, I'm not so certain. Ultimately, Harry Kane signed a six-year deal 3 years ago. So he's not got a lot of wiggle room in terms of his ability to be in breach of contract. By not turning up to training, if these stories are true, and clearly given that we've got senior broadcasters such as Sky effectively quoting this verbatim, he is in breach of contract, and therefore he's likely to be subject to sanction by the club. I've been in contact with our very friendly agent, Jonathan, and he said if Harry Kane continues this, then the severity of the sanctions could be ramped up. But whether that's in Spurs' interest, ultimately they want to be winning football matches, or they want to be in receipt of a large amount of cash. That they could end up, if they don't do things the right way, they could end up with neither. So we'll have to wait and see what happens there. There's an element of who blinks first. Harry Kane's agent looks like it's his brother and his dad. So do they have a lot of experience? I presume that they have been taking legal advice with regards to the nature of what Harry Kane can do. That's where we are. I don't think there's a lot of sympathy for Harry Kane. We were praising him only in the last podcast for his commitment to Leighton Orient and being a shirt sponsor. He scored goals in the European Championship. What's his driver? Ultimately, he's 28 now. When he retires, what does he want to look back on? Players want to be associated with success, and rightly or wrongly, the Spurs regime isn't generating that. And we did have sort of the farce of Spurs when they actually managed to get to a cup final, sacking the manager 6 days before the cup final took place and replacing him with a 29-year-old. And if that's their attitude towards success, there's an element of sympathy for the player.
Yeah, it's a shame that producer Guy is so insistent that we only talk about the financial aspect of football, because this is going to taint his memory for Spurs fans in the way that, if Wilf Zaha was to go and strike, it would, every Palace fan understands that he might want one last payday, one last hurrah before he retires. But if he went about it this way, and also the public spat between Jamie Carragher and Rio Ferdinand about Harry Kane's behaviour has been fascinating, but we can't talk about it, folks. And you've got producer Guy's email, questions@priceoffootball.com. Ask him why we can't talk about it. And his answer will be because it's called Price of Football, not football. That's not how he talks. You'll get a more accurate impression of how he talks in our interview with Rob coming up. North of the border, the two stories involving Rangers, Kieran, that both need a little explaining to me, to be perfectly honest. The first one is that Rangers are charging media outlets up to £25,000 for access to the club next season. Is access to the club the same as access to the stadium?
Trying to get to the bottom of this is a little bit difficult, because I think some of the broadcasters are being very coy and don't want to go public. But I think it was Mike Keegan at the Mail said that Rangers have now said that they will allow media partners a partner package, the first of which for £25,000, you get five exclusive interviews with players over the course of the season. And secondly, you'll get a sit down with Stevie G. Wow. Now, I think most journalists and most media outlets would say, we're suffering from the pandemic just as much as anybody else. Where are we going to find 25 grand from if we're a you know, if we're a newspaper, we're struggling to sell print copies. Advertising revenues are down, and there's a symbiotic relationship between the media and football clubs. They can be a positive on each other. Football sells newspapers, and newspapers keep up fans' interest in the football club. So it seems a strange angle from Rangers. They've also said for £10,000 you get one exclusive interview, and I think it allows you to attend matches with a reporter and a photographer and attend the pre-match press conference. Now, I don't know whether it's the post-match press conference. That could be under SPFL rules that anybody can attend. I mean, I've not followed the true intricacies of it. The trouble is, you know, there's no doubt that Rangers are in the ascendancy as far as Scottish football is concerned. They won the Premiership last season, rightly so, by a country mile, by being the best club in the country. Celtic have lost their first match of the season. Rangers have won theirs. Celtic appear to be in disarray. So is this a case of Rangers trying to use a bit of leverage, trying to get money from as many sources as possible? The trouble is, if they then come up against, if they then have a bad run this season, the press, who have not been allowed to have access, they're going to be sharpening their knives. And this could come back to bite Rangers on the bum for, they'll say it, well, if we get 10 or 20 of these deals, then we're talking, a significant amount of money, and it's justified. There are sections of the media that don't exactly cover themselves in glory at times, but ultimately, I think we're believers in free communication and a free press.
It's interesting you use the word bite there, Kieran, because I know a lot of people in TV sports broadcasting, and I know a lot of football journalists on both the broadsheets and the tabloids, and the consensus amongst all of them is you don't mess with the tabloids. And a quote that somebody gave me was, if you don't want to get bitten, then you need to feed the dogs, basically. And this strikes me as a risky, and I'm sure Rangers fans will be thinking, well, £25,000, not a lot of money, but they are vindictive. But all the tabloid journalists I know are amongst some of the most vindictive people I've ever met in my life. You'll have noticed I nearly said vindictive bastards, because that is essentially what they are. And they won't forget this. And it seems a risky strategy. And also there's another story which has broken in the last couple of days, that Rangers have got public beef, as I believe the young people would say.
You're down with the kids tonight, Kevin.
I was just looking over my shoulder to make sure Ed wasn't listening to that, as he would be. his eyebrows have similar vertical liftoff abilities to his mother. If you heard me say the public beef, but Rangers are unhappy with the sponsors of the Premier League in Scotland, aren't they? Which is an odd stance.
Yes, I mean, we spoke to Neil Doncaster, and Neil's always been very straight down the line with us,
the boss of Scottish football.
He's the chief executive of Scottish football. Trying to get a good long term deal for Scottish football involves patience and negotiation. So last year there wasn't a sponsor. I think there was an ideal of potentially not having a gambling related sponsor. I think the football authorities are aware of some of the criticism of the close links between the industry and the gambling industry. So they signed a deal with the online car retailer called Cinch, which irritatingly spells itself with a lowercase c, and not in a comedy way, your book, where you insisted on spelling Brighton with a lowercase b, which with for comic effect, I'm fully in favour of that. I'd expect nothing less.
Yeah, I insisted on it. The editor said it was immature.
That's why we're on this podcast.
Exactly, yeah. Well, it turned out it wasn't so much me being immature as Brighton having more independent bookshops than any other city in the country, yard for yard, meter for meter. And I pointed out to him that the sort of independent bookshops you get in Brighton are unlikely to stock my light-hearted football book anyway. And then I remembered that I still got the hump that Brighton is a city in the first place and Croydon isn't. So that conversation meandered down a back alley the same way this one has done. So let's reverse the vehicle out and go back to where Cinch is being spelt with a small C.
Yes. So it's an online car dealership. It's all that they're part of the group that also owns the very irritating We Buy Any Car organization. They signed a 5-year sponsorship deal worth £8 million. So that's £1.6 million per season. And at a time when every club in Scotland is, has done well to survive, the waves of the pandemic and the issues in relation to lockdown, every pound is welcome. As part of the deal, in the post-match interviews, they stand in front of those Perspex signs with sponsor names.
Yeah.
Well, there's got to be one for Cinch there because they are the league sponsor. And also they have to have a sleeve sponsor, with the name Cinch on. So that's all part of the package. And then Rangers say, we're not going to go along with that. So it was Rangers had their first home game of the season on Saturday. They were successful. They were victorious. But there was no sign of the arm sponsor and there was no sign of the backdrop sponsor.
Mm.
So then you look up a little bit further and the Rangers chairman is a guy called Douglas Park. And Douglas Park has a car dealership.
Ah.
So this could be seen. So from his perspective, he will say, why should I be seen to be supporting a rival business to my own? Mm. There is now a genuine fear, in Scottish circles that Cinch might say, well, hold on, ultimately, one of the main drivers for this is that Rangers and Celtic are the two clubs which generate the highest viewing figures. Mm. If we're going to lose access to one of those, if one of those aren't going to play ball, you're in breach of contract. We can rip it up and walk away, which leaves Scottish football in a mess from a financial point of view. So there's history between Rangers and the SPFL, as we're aware, because of the historic punishments that have been meted out, and people within Rangers feel that those were unduly harsh. Is it a case of Rangers trying to use some leverage to get some points across?
So clearly, clubs like Rangers and Celtic, Hearts and Hibs are not themselves signatories to this deal between the Scottish Football Authorities and Cinch. Then this is a deal that's not imposed on them, but this is a deal done around them rather than with them.
Well, it's done on their behalf through the collective that is the SPFL. In a similar way that Palace or Manchester United or Brighton or Liverpool, they're not responsible for the Premier League's TV deal that's just been signed that we opened the show with. They say to the they say to Richard Masters or Scottish Football says to Neil Doncaster, you are there to negotiate on our behalf,
right? So
as a collective,
would the contract then with the sponsors not include financial penalties for clubs that refuse to play ball?
It could do. Unless nobody thought that this would be an issue, because we've never seen a Premier League club turn around and say, we're not going to accept the £3 million a year that we get from TV.
Well, similar to that situation in the last couple of years of Alex Ferguson's reign at Man United, when he went through that phase of refusing to talk to the BBC, and of course that was in breach of contract, but nobody at the BBC had the guts to tell him that, basically, or to impose a fine. So maybe Rangers kind of think they're too big to impose punishment on, but that'll be one to have a look at. Now, I slightly panicked when I saw the headline for our next news story, because it said legal action, and I thought maybe Gary Rowett, ex-Birmingham manager, hadn't let us get away with our claim that he has a calculator fetish that we've talked about. But luckily, except for the journalist concerned, luckily it turned out that Chelsea owner Roman Abramovich is suing a British journalist. That seems a bit extreme. Do we know why?
Yes, this is a book written by Catherine Belton. It is called Putin's People. It is a best-selling book. And there were inferences that Roman Abramovich was acting at the behest of Vladimir Putin, you know, as a way of soft power, of getting favour in terms of building up a reputation, you know, a relationship with other countries, with people in the West, and so on, through buying a football club. So it looks like it's going to be an obscenely expensive legal case. You know, to me, it's the equivalent of somebody phoning up the local police because somebody's called me a slag on Facebook and I'm offended, and so on, except we're dealing with lots of zeros. But you know, British libel laws are, you know, probably some of the fiercest in the world. They're certainly some of the most lucrative in the world, from a financial perspective in terms of the fines. The reason why we've never published or the wrong'un's top 10 is that producer guy turns white at the very thought of that actually, you know, going out into the public domain. Although, as far as I'm concerned, it's just an opinion piece.
To be fair to producer guy, he did turn pale, but he did also take quite high up. I'm trying to think of the correct legal term. It's not high up, is it? They're quite professional legal advice that indicated to him that us just willy-nilly bandying the word wrong and about could cost him some money in libel and slander. But you're quite right. But the British libel laws are something you should talk to Ian Hislop about. He has very strong views on them. But it's a sledgehammer to crack a nut, isn't it? Because, I mean, basically what Roman Abramovich does here is draw attention to the accusations in far more than would otherwise have done so.
Yes. You know, Roman Abramovich no longer lives in the UK because he had a separate effective dispute with the government with regards to his visa renewal. And I think it does take away that he has done, you know, an awful lot of good, especially in terms of, you know, raising the profile of anti-Semitism, which is a scourge in certain aspects of London football, as we know, you and I both know which clubs we're talking about.
And it's an odd one, isn't it? Because he has done very good work in the Russian region that he's from and of which he was mayor. But, you know, the BBC themselves in a Panorama investigation made some fairly bold claims that he didn't respond to. So it's an interesting one. And this is one that we'll keep an eye on, and one that does make us probably be a bit more careful in the next two pods until we forget all about it and then randomly call somebody a wrong one. Our final news story is off the back of one we mentioned on Monday's pod about Manchester City's legal fight with the Premier League over alleged breaches of rules. Could, according to several sources, take years to sort out.
Yes, and this is again, you know, trebles all round from the silver-tongued fraternity at the prospect of this. There is pressure on the Premier League from the other 19 clubs to enforce the rules with regards to financial fair play. There's an article from Nick Harris in the Mail. And he'd been speaking to a former fairly senior Manchester City employee called Stefan Borson, who said, "You know, Manchester City will defend themselves to the hilt." We've seen in respect of the UEFA charges against Manchester City, they took years to come to court or come to fruition. Then there was an appeal. We saw with QPR in relation to their financial fair play settlement, that took 4 years from the date they were promoted to when they were sanctioned. We've got ongoing issues with our friends at Derby County. They've not published their account since 2018. Mm. We know that there is the ongoing battle over amortization, although I think they have to submit their accounts. It's either by the 15th or the 18th of August, so they're under pressure. But that is something which drags on and on. And these are clubs that don't have the deep pockets and the sense of aggrievement necessarily that Manchester City feel with regard to their relationship with the Premier League and these charges.
Now, Kieran, last time we interviewed Rob Angus, he was an emotional man. He was a donkey on the edge. He was vice chairman of Swindon Town Supporters Club, and Swindon Town's future was precarious. Now, things are very different. Rob, this is a very unprofessional way to start any interview on a podcast, but you've got your club back.
We have, Kevin. Yes, thank you. Yeah, it's a great feeling to have the club back. Have someone who's going to has promised for positive engagement, transparency, and openness.
Yeah. Last time we spoke, it was on Zoom, Rob, so we could see you pacing up and down in a state of some agitation. So I can't see you now, but I imagine you're sitting back, relaxed in a big chair in your fancy office.
Well, I'm not sure sitting back and relaxed because it's been manic and there's lots to do, but I've got a big smile on my face for sure.
I bet you have. And before we continue, Rob, we should point out that the new owner, Clem Morfuni, he hasn't just picked you at random. You from the Supporters Trust, you do have experience and skills, don't you? So tell us a little bit about your background and why you were suitable for this position.
Yeah, sure. So I've worked at Nationwide Building Society for over 25 years. I've worked in finance roles, strategy roles. I've run business lines for Nationwide. So a number of different roles over those years and in, you know, what we would call senior executive positions for the last 12 years or so. So quite a bit of history. And I've worked very closely with Clem when he was, if you like, on the club side of the Supporters Trust trying to acquire the county ground and working with the local council as well, Swindon Borough Council. So I think through those discussions and negotiations, I think Clem saw the skills that I could bring to the role. I think he also wanted to illustrate a point to the fans and the broader community that he's serious when he means he wants openness, transparency and engagement with supporters and, you know, to make a point that he wants a supporter running the club for it.
I'm not entirely sure how to conduct this interview, Rob, because it's unusual for us, a happy ending. It's brilliant when we get to speak to people when it's been resolved properly. But remind us and remind some of our new listeners briefly, if possible, what went on to cause this and how this outcome came about.
Well, sure. So obviously, Lee Power acquired the club back in 2014, actually, after a court case with Jed McCrory, who had come in after Andrew Black of Betfair fame and founder had decided he'd had enough of funding the football club. And over a number of years, Lee Power, sort of the fans and supporters trusting Lee Power, sort of dissipated with a lack of transparency and engagement. Clem Morfuni actually initially, who's him himself, said he's a huge football nut, really, both as a supporter and a fan, was looking to sponsor a football club and got in contact with Lee Power back in 2015. They were first introduced and he initially sponsored the club for a number of years. And then Lee Power invited him to invest in the club and become a minority shareholder, which he did in around about 2017. And then he started to engage with the supporters groups and the supporters trust. And we started to talk to him and we sort of said, do you know what you're doing and who you're dealing with? And he was like, yeah, don't worry. I've dealt with worse in, you know, construction trade and the Australian construction market because, his business is a construction business, Axis Services Group and predominantly mechanical and engineering, but other elements of construction as well. And you know, we hit it off and he would, you know, promise to sort out the openness and engagement. But then he had disputes with Lee Power over getting his shareholding when he paid the money over. and getting the transparency as to what losses he was funding. He then found out that another owner allegedly owning 50% of the club, Michael Standing, and legal action pursued in terms of Clare Mulfooney getting his shareholding confirmed. And then, you know, I think he joined forces really with Michael Standing as they both sort of saw that, if you like, they'd been wronged in their view from Lee Power, and took action against Lee Power to try and wrestle back and control the club. The court action between Michael Standing and Lee Power continues in terms of Michael Standing's claim that he owns 50% of the club, because, you know, there are monies that Clem has paid over to Lee Power for the club. And I guess, you know, depending on the outcome of that case, some of that is due to Michael Standing. And there are other assets that Lee Power owns that Michael Standing claims are partly his, including a training ground that Lee Power acquired, you know, a few years back.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
But just to reassure any anxious Swindon fans out there, that this takeover is done and dusted. The I's are dotted, the T's are crossed, and Clem Mulfooney now owns the club.
Yes, that's right, Kevin. So there was a, you know, Lee Power was looking to either put the club into administration or sell to apparently an American group called Able, who no one could really find anything about, and supporters tried to engage but didn't get any response. The judge basically said to Lee Power that, you know, administration was an option because he had a willing buyer in Clem Mulfooney and the Axis Group. And therefore administration was not an option, and if he was to sell, he would have to sell to Clare Mulfooney and Axis. Now, I'm not sure Lee Power fully understand that, because he then looked to try and sell to Able, believing that Clare Mulfooney only had the ability to buy his minority shareholding, but actually Clare Mulfooney had a preemption right to buy if the club was being sold, to match you know, any amount, and to buy the whole amount. And therefore, you know, Lee Power made that offer with Able. Clem Mulfooney and Axis Group matched that offer, exercised their preemption rights, and the club was there, then sold. And, you know, subject to the EFL approval of owners and directors test, which took a little bit of time and quite a bit of rigour, Clem was able to take control of the club. So ultimately, it happens really through an error from Lee Power understanding the preemption rights that Clare Mulfooney and the Axis Group had.
I want to talk a little in a moment about the mood around the club as it stands and what your plans are for the future. But producer Guy doesn't like it when interviews become, as he puts it, bloody lovins. Right? So I just for producer Guy, is there anybody apart from Lee Power who doesn't think that this is the right outcome, that thought there were other options were available? Or would you say that 99.9% of Swindon fans are at this moment, on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 happy?
I think at this moment, 99.9% of fans are, you know, at a scale of 10 happy. Obviously, there's a lot of work to do. The club, you know, Clem, you know, I myself inherit the club in a lot of debt, you know, we estimate that's between £3.5-4 million. We're still working that through, and that's to external creditors. And then there are the monies that Lee Power will claim he's owed in the director's loan account and debentures that he's acquired from previous owners, Andrew Black and Sir Martin Arbib. So we're expecting, you know, something might come down the line on that. We don't know. So there's a lot of debt for us to work through and start paying off. So a lot of work to do. And whilst Clem has already, you know, invested pretty close to a seven-figure fund, figure sum in the last couple of weeks or 11 days that we've been in, to make sure the wages are paid, to make sure key suppliers are paid and key creditors are paid. There's still a lot to go, and we're still, you know, uncovering things. And you know, the club, you know, needs the fans and supporters to rally around and buy season tickets and buy matchday tickets and shirts, so that, you know, we're all in it, you know, working together, and we're not just relying on burning bigger and bigger holes from Clem Mulfooney's pocket, because, you know, he's not a sugar daddy. He's got a connection. He's built a love for Swindon Town over the last 7 years. But he's not got endless pockets.
Kieran, can I bring you in there just to explain what debentures are? Just asking for a friend.
Yeah, debentures, it's a posh word for a loan.
Oh, okay,
It's effectively the football club gives somebody a piece of paper, which is an IOU, and the other party gives them cash.
Right. Rob, Clem Mulfooney himself said that you inherit the club in an extremely difficult set of circumstances. But so far, have you found that the day-to-day running of the club was sort of fairly okay, that ticked over, or is that going to need a complete overhaul as well, do you think?
Well, I mean, the real issue having inherited is that it's been devoid of leadership for a few months. You know, very few bills have been paid during that time. You know, we inherited the fact that the EFL and PFA got together to ensure that staff got paid 60% of the wages for June, you know, in early July. We've now, all of the balance of the June wages have been paid. The July wages were paid early. So the staff there, though, have been fantastic. You know, the backroom staff who've been working, you know, on an unpaid basis have been, you know, amazing, keeping the club going. The coaching staff that were left, the goalkeeping coach, Steve Mildenhall, and one of the academy coaches, Lee Peacock, both ex, you know, Swindon players, you know, again, you know, have tried to take what few professional players we had and the academy teams to try and start the pre-season, all without being paid and with a huge amount of uncertainty as to when this takeover would go through. So they've done an amazing job, but devoid of any money to pay anything and any leadership. So I think they've done the best job they can, and they've responded, you know, brilliantly to, you know, Clem coming in and myself as well. And we are getting back on track. We had our at home friendly at the county ground on Saturday, and we got things ready for that. It was a bit close, but we got there, and obviously got the first game, which is away, which is probably helps us a bit and gives us a bit more time before our first home game against Carlisle on the 14th of August.
You sent rather an inspiring message to the fans before that last pre-season friendly. And specifically, you talked about setting a target of 6,000 season tickets. How's that going?
Yeah, it's going well. I think we're at 1,500 right now. We've had issues, so and I think for reasons that yourselves on this pod have covered previously, we're having issues with the card acquiring companies because of the financial credibility of Swindon Town historically, and because of issues of Berry and COVID. The card acquiring companies are either wanting a £1 million bond or withholding the monies that they take on season tickets until the matches are paid. And obviously at this moment, the club needs cash flow to come in so that it can, you know, rebuild the team. It can make sure it meets the salary management cap protocols. So at the moment, we're selling those season tickets through, you know, windows at the back of the stand. So old style, if you like. We've got telephone options going up, which will be up tomorrow. And we'll have a financing option via direct debit. So a minimum of 3 payments or 9 payments that will be online later this week. We'll explore other options as well. So we've sort of gone a bit retro, really, on the season tickets so that we can make them available, get people, you know, to buy them. But the card acquiring option, because of those issues with understandably the liability those card acquiring company takes on, with the chargebacks that could hit them, you know, that has been a roadblock for us.
Do you know what? As a Palace fan, I would happily take up the option of queuing around the car park to get my season ticket if it was available. And I think a lot of fans would be happy to do that as well, wouldn't they? It's kind of old school, but most football fans are, aren't they?
Yeah, and we've seen a good supply of demand. Swindon is a team that does, though, have a lot of support outside of the town. So around Wiltshire, it's the only professional club in Wiltshire. Expects into, you know, into Gloucestershire, Oxfordshire and Berkshire, almost like a 30-mile radius, as well as the rest of the whole of Wiltshire. So there are quite a lot of supporters who come from outside of the town, which is why important that we do try and give them an online option and get the telephone lines open. So I think we'll have four lines open tomorrow. It's been a bit of a work, but as I say, you know, and really there's quite a skeleton staff. There's not loads of people left because, but the ones that left when they, you know, haven't been paid for a month or so, you know, they are dedicated all Swindon fans working really, really hard for the club.
Again, every football fan knows that every club has got people like that, people that are there through the good times and the bad. And it's quite often them that we talk about on this pod when there's a good outcome. It's for people like that who live for the club. But you're right, you've got a sort of strange transfer embargo. It's like a double transfer embargo going on at the moment. Tell us why that is and how you go about resolving that.
Yeah, sure. So the double embargo, one of the embargoes is the fact that we've taken the hardship loans, if you like. I think it's the monitored loan, they call them, which has been taken from the EFL. So that makes a restriction on the amount of wages that you can pay. It's about £1,300 in League Two, and you know, I think those numbers are, you know, are public domain. The other embargo was in relating to the fact that the club hadn't paid wages. It didn't have a payment plan with HMRC. It didn't have a payment plan with the rent owed to the council who owned the county grounds, a guarantee of the pitch being provided. And it also hadn't submitted its financial forecast for the salary management cap sort of protocol forecast. The good news is we had confirmation from the EFL in the last 24 hours or so that all of the restrictions in respect of wages, HMRC payment plan, the council confirmation and repayment plan, and the salary management cap protocol and forecast, we've ticked all those off and done those. So Those elements of the embargo have been lifted, which means that we can sign loan players for a year because it was 6 months restricted, and that does restrict you. And we can offer contracts for more than 1 year as well. But while still having the £1 million monitored loan, we're still under the wage cap restriction. But it's a difficult balance now because we're still, you know, we've got unknowns out there to quote, you know, a famous American politician one time. And the monitored loans, the hardship loans, you know, they are interest free. As we understand it, the wage restrictions start for a year. So it's understanding when we decide to repay those, knowing that we could still be, you know, lifting up, you know, opening cupboards and, you know, skeletons dropping out. So that's a balancing act that we're taking right now as, you know, hopefully more cash flow comes into the club, that it generates revenue as well as, you know, burning a hole in Clem Mulfooney's pockets. Mm.
I noticed that in one of your interviews, inclusion and access is something that you feel strongly about. And just from what you said earlier on in our conversation, it's clear that these are things that are important to you. But are these things that the club haven't done enough for in the past, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, we've had, when I was in the trust, we had dialogue with the Disabled Supports Club for Swindon Town, and they told us some stories that, you know, they've pretty much been ignored really, and not really looked after. So one of the things that we've immediately done is get the chair Lee of that group to come over and meet Clem Mulfooney and I at the ground, and we went through and looked at some immediate improvements that we can make for our disabled supporters. We have an aim to make the stadium as accessible as we possibly can and very inclusive for our supporters to attend. You know, I've got two children with autism, one of them autism with a learning disability. I'm keen to make sure that we make our stadium as accessible as possible, and we welcome all supporters, you know, from all diverse sort of backgrounds, and really make sure that the disabled supporters would come in and can have an enjoyable day and get decent facilities. We've still got a lot of work to do. We've done some immediate things that we can work through in terms of you know, fixing leaking roofs on, you know, in the covered areas that, that we've got at the county ground, and looking to make some immediate improvements before, you know, working through other improvements that we can make, which will be more of a longer term thing, which will be a bit more structural and take a bit more time. But it's very much an aim that we make the county ground as accessible as possible for all.
That's brilliant. Palace, in the last couple of years, turned one of the executive boxes into a quiet room for autistic kids. And it's kind of, it took a bit of explaining to people, but when you see it, you understand why it's important. And then you understand why it's important that other clubs do the same thing as well. It's because there's more to do from all of us on those, that angle, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And that's a fantastic example from Palace in terms of doing that. It's really good. And you know, again, you know, in time, we'd like to do something similar and as I said, make the stadium and the match day experience accessible for all, and a great day out for all the family from very diverse backgrounds, you know, so that, you know, people really enjoy their day out.
New owner, Clem Morthuni, and new chief executive, you, have talked about, and I quote, turning things around. In your head, do you have a more specific definition of what that might entail? And do you sort of break that down into achievable targets, or do you just kind of, well, you just kind of know by instinct when you've turned things around?
Well, I think we've got a plan that we look to stabilise this year, get the club on a sound financial footing, a sound you know, running behind the scenes footing, and a sound playing footing. So that's the sort of the key aim, sort of stabilisation, and then look to build from there and move the club out of League Two and into League One, and then build again. So that's very much, if you like, the plan that we're looking to sort of lay down. It is, you know, it is 100 miles an hour right now. The pace is really fast, as we, you know, we're starting the season way behind many other clubs. You know, the head coach was appointed only sort of 10 days ago, and we started really with really about five or six, you know, contracted sort of professionals that were turning up at that sort of stage. And I think we're up to about 10 now, and we'll probably be up to the dozen ahead of the game on Saturday. You know, we've got a great director of football in Ben Shawley, who's got, you know, great talent spotter and lots of good contacts. So, but, you know, the team have hardly trained together, you know, they've not probably gone to the same fitness. So that's going to take time to get back together. Equally, you know, the improvements that we want to make are going to take time as well. So it is stabilisation before, you know, hopefully, you know, a promotion charge the following year, and stabilise the club in League One, and then look to progress again.
You obviously love your club, Rob. You've been a fan since you were five, I think it was. You've been part of the Supporters Trust during what we can only describe as a battle. How weird is it going to be, the first home game, when you're sitting there as the chief executive of the football club that you've loved all your life?
Yeah, I mean, we had a friendly on Saturday against Peter at home, and we had, you know, a good number, about just over 2,500 there. And that was quite a surreal experience. I think one of my former colleagues and bosses actually at Nationwide referred to me as, this must be like you're living a dream. And it is to a degree that was a good analogy that he came through or referenced there. And I think, you know, hopefully the home game against Colar on the 14th, and we're really hoping that we can get 10,000 in the stadium. We're really gonna push it. It will be a very emotional and fantastic day as we do that.
I think it's really important that the people who own the club, the people who run the club, are fans of the club, but. Does it give you that extra level of pressure, the fact that you love this club so much and you're now directly involved with turning it round? Or is that something you welcome, or is it something you think, oh, do you know what, I wouldn't mind just being a fan again for a year or two?
Yeah, I mean, I think I welcome that pressure. I always welcome the challenge as well, that I'm going to hold, you know, Clem to account for his statements on transparency, engagement, openness, and my own, you know, statements on that as a trust member, and make sure that I hold myself to account on that. And I know the Supporters Trust will do that with me as well. I think the one bit, I think, Kevin, that in terms that I'll miss is being in the town end with my son, you know, and rather watching, if you like, from having to watch, if you like, from more posher seats. So that is going to be something that take a little bit used to. You know, I went down and saw my son before the game on last Saturday, and at halftime, and saw him as if he was there with his granddad. So that's a bit that I'll miss a bit, not being able to get into the town end with the rest of the fans and really cheer loudly in the team.
And you're going to have to stay sober till about 7 o'clock at night as well.
I know that is that's one thing I did notice, is despite the fact that, you know, there's plenty of beer available, needing to sort of stay sober and being, you know, running around and making sure everything's sort of working means you don't really get the chance to sort of have the urge.
Finally, Rob, do you have a message for fans at other clubs that are currently going through a similar situation that your club went through in previous months and years?
Yeah, look, I think, you know, keep doing what you're doing, keep pushing for transparency, openness and engagement. Try and work positively and proactively with the ownership and illustrate the benefits. Again, you know, if you're not really seeing that response, then keep the pressure on and keep going. You know, this has taken a long time for us to get to this position, you know, and having a new dawn and a new era with Glenn Mulvaney as owner. So it's a long process, but keep going, be persistent. And I know the Swindon Town Supporters Trust SDFC would be keen to engage with other trusts and provide support and insight. We had some great support and insight from Blackpool Supporters Trust when we were dealing no money, no power campaign. And we've had some good engagement with Northampton and Swansea Supporters Trust. So I think, you know, stick together, stick at it, and keep driving for that openness, engagement, and transparency.
Well, I can't tell you how happy we are. It's been a fantastic story. It's been a joy to watch social media over the past few days to see the explosion of joy from Swindon fans. Obviously, there will be moments, because football fans are football fans. You lose you come December and you lose on Boxing Day, and everyone's going to be moaning. But it's a brilliant story, and it just shows that in the end, you mess with fans at your peril, basically, that the clubs belong to us. Swindon belongs to you, not somebody with money who wants to make it their plaything. And this has been a brilliant outcome, and we really wish you all the best for the season to come.
Thank you, Kevin. Much appreciated. Thank you, Kieran. And thanks for all your support. It's been really appreciated.
Kieran, William Wordsworth described poetry as emotion recollected in tranquility, and there's a sense of that now from Rob, that turbulence, that grief, that worry about the future of his club is in the past. He's determined to make things better, and it's remarkable, Kieran, what can happen when football fans are roused to action.
Yes, it's. I'm absolutely delighted for everybody connected with Swindon Town, with the exception of one individual who I'll just go by the name of Voldemort, I think. Rob's a genuinely good guy.
Yeah.
You know, first of all. So it's good to see good people succeed. It's also good to hear that, you know, the relationship between fan groups. You know, he'd been in contact with our good friends at Blackpool, who had made sacrifices with a broadly similar issue to do with their former owner, who, for reasons which I can't say, I'm not prepared to say what he used to do, but he wasn't a very nice man, and I'm absolutely delighted to see that through persuasion, pushing, using the law smartly, Swindon Town supporters now have a club to support, which they feel can be in their name for the following season. There's an awful lot of work to do. I know from my own experience at Brighton, when we thought that we'd escaped from our former owner, who I would quite happily call a wrong'un. Yeah, we were crap for years, and there are times when you're on the, you know, you're getting stuffed 4-0 at home by Rochdale. You think, why did we go through this? Why didn't we just go and chuck in the towel? But what I would say to Swindon fans is, just keep on going through the tough times. There will be some, you know, they've got a lot of catching up to do. Be patient and celebrate that you've got a club to support.
Yeah, I didn't really like to throw this in during the interview because I didn't want to spoil the mood, much as I know Guy likes us to be more journalistic sometimes, but it was a celebration, that interview. But Rob did sort of indicate when he talked about worrying what would happen when you open certain cupboard doors, he did hint that Lee Power, Voldemort, could still cause some mischief in the future if he chose to do.
Yes, there is an outstanding director's current account. So therefore there is money owed to Lee Power. How much that is uncertain. If anybody has ever followed the travails of Bolton Wanderers and their relationship with their former owner Ken Anderson, the claims can be quite large for the amount of money involved. And here you've got to put in, you know, the hard yards in terms of following the money, following the cash trails, and so on to get accuracy. If there are outstanding loans which Lee Power has bought from other people, then he could be ultimately the recipient of those as well. Mm. So it's going to be a long and slow process. And if Lee Power decides to try to enforce things as quickly as possible, it could cause more bumps in the road. But, you know, hopefully they are just bumps in the road.
And there's one other thing I want to mention, because unfortunately it came off when we were off air, and that is that Don Rogers, the legend that is Don Rogers, has now become an ambassador of the club in recent days, and also that Rob had told Don Rogers that I have a picture of him on my wall, and Don Rogers was really pleased, and I blushed. The fact that Don Rogers knows that I've got a picture of him on my wall makes me very happy. For younger fans of both Swindon and Palace, Google him and you'll understand why he was such a legend to us all. Now, Kieran, our next part, that sounded very lovely then, didn't I?
No, but rightly so. Why can't you have an affection for a former player who meant so much to you? I see nothing wrong with that. I've got a picture of Glenn Murray in my toilet.
Okay. Let's not pick at that, Fred. that reminds me, by the way, I've got somebody sent me a Peter Ward T-shirt for some reason to pass on to you. I'm going to have to pass it on to you fairly quickly. No, it's just the way I said legend. I sounded like Craig Revel Horde when I said he was such a legend, darling. I am a terrible lovey at heart, to be perfectly honest. I just hide it beneath this South London veneer. Our next pod, of course, is on Monday, and it's questions. So if you have one for us about any aspect of football finance, then email us on questions@priceoffootball.com. And if you'd like to make a small contribution to our always free-to-air pod, then please go to patreon.com/priceoffootball. And in the meantime, I shall leave you for our customary farewell in the hands of Kieran Maguire.
Well, thanks again, folks, for the feedback. You know, you take us to task when we get things wrong, and we... Yeah, we take it on board. I know I said something about Lewisham Council and West Ham, which was a major own goal from me on the Monday show. But it's good. It keeps us on our toes. If you enjoy the show, tell your friends. Try to persuade people to follow the show. We do appreciate it. And if you can give us 5 stars on that purple Apple icon. Write whatever you want. You can give us the 5 stars and write something rude about us. It makes no difference. It helps us in the charts and it helps us to have a bit of credibility. We're hoping to be speaking to Tracy Crouch soon. So that particular interview has not gone away. Tracy, quite rightly, has been extremely busy with regards to the fan-led review, and she's entitled to a break, as is everybody else. So just be patient, and we're in current talks.
Yeah, our appeal for credibility would have been improved by you pronouncing credibility correctly. and by me telling you off correctly as well, rather than not even being able to pronounce. Correctly. All I'll say to our listeners is if you want perfection and facts, then Swiss Ramble is freely available. And
I don't think he's free.
He's not free. We know he's not free. He's very expensive. But if you want ramshackle approaches at the truth, then we're your possibly your only option. And we're in the top 20 Guardian independent pods, which I noticed Guy tweeted in the hope that we would say, all thanks to Guy, which we both resolutely refused to do.
But it is, because let's face it, without him, this would have died in its arse 18 months ago.
Yeah, no, fair point. Without him sending us the link to each other every week, we would never have been able to do this. You're quite right. Thanks, Guy. Love you.
Bye.
The price of football. Price of football.